So we are learning Chulin Daftes. Chulin Masechus Chulin, or in Chulin Daftes Samal. And this is our first entree, this sugya, the Lo Badak Mai, is our first entry into the world of Chazak Demeikara. And as we saw over the last couple of days, it's a very, very perplexing entry into the world of Chazak Demeikara. And two, a double machlokas Rashi and Tosas. In both cases, Rashi seems confusing. As I mentioned to you earlier this morning, this is our Vahine moment. We need to look out to some other sugya. We're troubled by details in the world of Chazakah, so we need to dig into the core guts of Chazakah, and then spend a day or two there, and then come back, and everything hopefully will be clear. Now, we happen to be lucky. Of the last 15 years of Shir, I was looking back, at least three or four of them, I started the year not on Daf Beis, but Chulin Daf Yom Beis Nid Alef Amud Aleph. Because the sugyas here of Rov and Chazakah, which it's not the first sugya of Chazakah and Chulin, but this is logically where it all starts. This is absolutely fundamental for understanding some of the Masechtos. So you saw, so let's begin to get our feet wet a little bit. Yud Aleph Beis with Chazakah, Yud Aleph Amud with Rov, and either today or next time we'll begin talking about how they clash, the sugya and kedushin of Rov versus Chazakah, and hopefully from that clash, things will become much clearer. So let's take a look here. The sugya, the source of Chazakah, the source of Rov. A blot and a half forward, after more Hamdin with other cases of Chazakah, there'll be more over the course of Testament Beis, Yud Aleph Aleph, other cases of I checked the Sakin and there was a problem with the Sakin. Now what do I do looking back? Chazakah, no Chazakah. So after a blot and a half of handling with Chazakah, which again begins with our sugya and Testament Aleph, the Gemara finally says, could you please explain to me? We've been handling Chazakah the last blot and a half and all over Shas. Could you please explain to me where on earth this comes from? We're always assuming follow Chazakah. Where does it come from? Minoha Milsa, the Amor Rabbanim. But where does this thing that the rabbis say, the Milsa the Amor Rabbanim, whenever you see that language, by the way, you only see, I think, a few times in Shas, that usually have a din, you say, you know, Minoha Nemili, or Minoha. Minoha Milsa the Amor Rabbanim is when you're introducing not just a din, but a major klal, a major principle in halacha. This idea, the Amor Rabbanim, the rabbi saying this principle comes from all over Shas, where's it from? How do you know that if I don't know what the story is now, but I know what the story was in the past, I don't know if it's changed or not, that I assume I follow Chazakah d'Meikara. I presume status quo ante. I presume that whatever the status, known status was yesterday, the known status was a week ago, I'll assume that's still the case. Let's at least get a flavor. We'll get to this Gemara properly in order, and then we'll see more of what's going on. But at least the beginning of the taste of the Gemara. The Gemara says it comes from, of all places, it comes from one of the parts of Chumash that strikes us as the farthest removed from halacha l'maaseh b'zman hazeh. It comes from Parshas Metzora. This din of Chazakah that comes up halacha l'maaseh every day. Every 20 pages of Shulchan Aruch, but the source of it is Nagan. The source of it is Parshas Metzora. The source of it, you know that there are three types of Tzaras. There's Tzaras Adam, Tzaras Begadim, and Tzaras Batim. You can have Tzaras on a person's body. Tzaras Adam, you can have Tzaras on clothing or fabric. It's Tzaras Begadim. You can have Tzaras in a house. So what does the Gemara say? Yerushua ben Achmeni quotes from the Amora, early Amora of Yonasan, Omar Kra, the Yotza HaKoim in Abayis, El Pesach Abayis, the Hiskir Sabayis Shivas Yamim. The Kohen comes to the fellow finds what looks like it may be a Negat Saras in his house. He goes to tell the Kohen. The Kohen walks into the house to inspect, to take a look at the Negat. There's a whole Masech, beautiful, complicated, difficult Masech as Negat, Perek or two of which are about Negevatim. So the coin has to take a look. Does it follow all the different rules of the color and the placement and the shape, the size? And then, if he says tar, so tar, good. It doesn't qualify as a nega, you're good to go. Maybe there's some mold, you got to clean it up, but there's no taras. If he says tar, give out. But if he looks in Neg and he says to himself, wow, this is Tameh, and you should know that one of the unique features of Negaim, as opposed to almost every other Erev Halacha, is that this usually a Rav Paskin Zeshayla, so I'm telling you what the din already is. You show me the lung of the animal. If I say it's a treifa, it means I'm telling you that it has already been a treifa. And I'm telling you what the story is. I don't make it a treifa by telling you it's a treifa. It is a treifa. I'm just telling you, you should know that's the din. Right? If you ask me what's 2 plus 2, I tell you 4. I didn't make it 4. If I ask you what's the square, if you ask me what's the square root of 3, I tell you it's around 1.732. I didn't make it that. That's what it is. I'm just being megala to you, the metzius. So usually you ask a shayla, the rav gives a tshuva, he's just letting you know what the din already is. Negaim doesn't work that way. Negaim, the psak of the kohen, makes it true. It's not just mevar what the din is anyways. Words, even if the nega fits all the rules of tsaras, it's not tameh until the kohen says tameh. So you have a Mishnah that says a fellow comes to a chassan during Sheva Brachas, comes to the Sheva Brachas week, Sheva's name Mishnah, comes to the Kohen and he says, look at the spot in my arm, what is it? The Mishnah says the Kohen might say, come back next week. I don't want to talk to you. If I'm going to say Tameh, so then I'm making him Tameh in the middle of the week he's supposed to be Besimcha. Aye, what do you mean? But if he's Tameh, he's Tameh. I'm just going to close my ignorance is bliss. If he's Takatame, he's Takatame. The answer is, that's usually how it is, but by Tzaras, even if the Nega is problematic, it's not actually Tame until the Kohen says so. It's one of the conditions to make the Tumah, the Kohen has to pass it. And that's critical for seeing the next line of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, the Torah says the Kohen looks, and he says Tame. What happens in between the Kohen looking and saying Tame? What does the Chumash say? Yatsa, right? He's looking, he's right there. First he has to walk outside. The Yatsa HaKohen Min HaBayis Al Pesach HaBayis, after he observes, after he examines the Nega, he walks out of the house, the Hizkir HaBayis Shiva Zev, then he declares Hesker. So why is he walking out? Why does he just stay on the spot? No, he doesn't want to become Tameh, right? There's something not exactly Ohel, but somewhat similar to Ohel called Tumas Bia. There's something similar to Ohel, not getting into the details, in the Golem as well. So if he's going to be in the house, he may become Tameh too. So it's in his best interest to get out of the house. Okay, but why did Chumash tell me? He can figure out on his own. You don't want to be Tameh, obviously walk out. Why did Tameh tell me she leaves?
It's the one before.
Oh, because there's a din involved. What's the Chiddush? The Gemara says, Dilma de nafik va'asa batzalei shi'ura. It's a chiddush he's allowed to leave. You look at the nega. So I walk over to the nega and I say, look at that. Look at the placement across two walls, the color, the size. And then I walk out, and now I'm outside and I say, Tameh. What's the problem?
You became Tameh.
The problem is, I didn't become Tameh because I was outside, but now I don't see it anymore. Dilma ad nafik va'asa, maybe in the time it took him to leave, batzar le shiura, batzar means less than, or shrink, in this case. It was nisma'et. Maybe the nega shrank.
Yeah.
Maybe the nega shrank, maybe it became less than the shear. There's one of the halachos, as I was saying before, there are a couple of conditions that a discoloration has to meet in order to qualify as nega tzaras. One of them is the color, one of them is the placement, and one of them is the shear. For a neg on a person, and I believe also for the house, the shear is a kigris. Kigris, in modern equivalent, it has relevance to Hilchos Nida also, so we don't pass in the gum shiles, we do pass in the shiles. The gris is assumed to be the size of a penny. It has to be the size of a penny. Okay. So, sometimes it could be very big, it could be just the size of a penny, or it could be even smaller than that. Whatever. However, the whole thing is miraculous. So it is what it is. So the coin looked at it, and he said, okay, he measured it, he brought along his penny, he holds the penny up against the wall, he says, okay, it's a shear. Then he walks out. How do you walk out and say Tameh? Once you're outside, I can't see it.
You just see what you say?
Well, if by the time he said, it doesn't become a Nega Tameh, that's why I said before is important. If by Tzaras, it's not just a regular psach that's negala what the din is. Anyways, by tzaras, the kohen is actually making the tumah. So it's not tamei unless he says tamei. But on the other hand, if a kohen walks over to and says, I won't say I'm a kohen, so I won't try this anymore. The kohen walks over and says, ah, gun, you're tamei. And the gun says, there's nothing on my arm. The kohen just walks over to a random guy in the street who does not have any discoloration on his arm. He says, oh, you're tamei. Is a fellow tamei? No, because in order to be tzaras, you have to have a nega, and the kohen has to declare. But if you're missing either one, it's not tzaras. That's what the Gemara here is clearly assuming. That if a kohen walks over and says tamei, but at the moment he says tamei, there is no nega, or there's no nega large enough to fit the qualifications, so then he doesn't do anything. So how does the Torah to now, with that in mind, the Gemara says, let's pull the pieces together. A lot of bits and pieces. Let's put it all together. Because the Gemara says it's in just a line or two. How does the Torah tells me the kohen has the right to walk out? And that's a chiddush, because when he walks out, he's no longer looking at the nega. Maybe the nega disappeared, or at least shrank under the minimum shear of a penny, a kibris, by the time he said, tamei. So if the nega shrank, if the nega wasn't kashir when he said tamei, so then it's not tamei. So shouldn't we tell the kohen, you have to be looking at the nega when you say tamei? How does he know that the nega is a kashir when he says tamei? He saw it before. Okay, so before, what does that help? But he's not seeing it now. So what's the answer? How could it be? The Torah is telling me, I saw at 3 o'clock, I saw the nega. At 3:01, I said tamei. How do I know at 3:01 that it's still the nega is still there, the nega is still a kashir? And it's chazaka. The Torah says, ah, this one pasuk in the middle of an obscure area of halacha. Nige bate, we don't know anything about this. That's the source of chazaka. That, again, the Torah went out of its way to say the yotza me'abayis. Why do I have to say the kohen leaves the house? To tell me this din. To tell me that the kohen does not have to be observing the nega at the moment he says tamei. It's enough they saw it earlier. Maybe now it shrank. Maybe. But if you don't know whether it shrank or not, so then you say chazaka. Apparently you can follow chazaka. Like we said, the case in Maseches Nida, the mikvah shenimdat. I measured the mikveh yesterday, and it was kashir, and now I go in today without measuring. So again, without getting into all the details, at least in principle, if I measured yesterday and it was full, and I can't tell whether a lot evaporated or not, I go in today. Chazaka tells me becheskas malay. Yesterday, last time I checked, it was full. I'll assume it's still full. Like here, last time I checked the nega, it was kashir. It was at least the size of the gris, at least the size of a penny. So I can assume, if I can't tell whether it shrank or not, I can assume it's still at least the size of a penny. Okay, then the Gemara gets involved again when we get to the Gemara in order. We get to some more of the details. The Gemara says, how do you know that's the case? Maybe the guy is looking through the door, looking through the window. Maybe, how do you know this? Because he left the house, he can't see. The Gemara ultimately says, essentially the case I just gave before. The neck is over here. The neck is over here. If the neck is on that wall facing the door, so I could, if the neck is right next to Wilkes, right, it's on the wall next to Wilkes. So now I'm outside, but I'm still, I got to my bike, I can still see. So the Gemara says, very nice, well, if the neck is over here, or over here, your hole, like sometimes it has to be across the corner. But it's the corner right near the door. So you have such a case also. But the only case of Nige Batim is when it's on the opposite wall. No! But I can't see. I can't see that still a shear when I say tamei. Again, so the Gemara says, exactly, obviously, you're relying on chazaka. And this becomes the source of chazaka d'meikara. And what's nice here, and what's simple here, the negun part, if you're not yet comfortable with negun, if Tara still scares you, you have to get unscared. But at the point where Taurus is still mysterious and scary, so that makes the Nelim a little complicated. I don't really know what's going on. But what's simple is that the Gemara gives one makar and pilpils back and forth, different kashas over the course of the oven. The lamaisa of this is the makar. When all is said and done, again, when we get up to Daf Yud Amud Beis in order, and reach the next semester, we can see the whole shock and tire of the Gemara. But also, the Gemara says, lamaisa, after all the dust settles, after all the kashas and terutzim, over the course of the rest of Yudam and Beis onto the top line or two of Yudam and Beis, Lamaisa, this is the marker. We want to know Minoha Milsa again. The Gemara had asked, Yudam and Beis, how do I know Chazak Nimekara? What's the source? And what was the Gemara's first source for Chazak Nimekara? Back half of the room? Tzoras. And what's the Maskana? Tzoras. That is it. We gave one marker, we pilpul, and it survives. That is the marker, and that's why the sugya is all of half an amud. Minoha Milsa Marban Chazaka? Half an amud. But then the Gemara is probably off an aleph. The second line has another question that sounds very similar, but is a lot more complicated to answer, and that's how you know Rov. Before we jump into that, let's take some questions. Yeah.
Two questions.
Sure.
One, how is one going to be able to measure that it's the size of a gris if he's standing 30 feet away?
You walk over and you look closely.
No, but when you walk outside and you're 30 feet away.
Oh, you mean if you're looking across? That's what you mean. You're saying even if I'm looking across, it might... it's a good question. How can I tell from a distance if I'm, even in the case I'm looking across? So the answer is, maybe, if you go to a dermatologist, not psoriasis, just some other skin issue, they will sometimes take pictures, and they want to see, or they have a rash, you have some sort of inflammation on the skin, sometimes they want to see, come back in 2 weeks, let's see if it pisium. The Torah calls pissing. Let's see if it grows, if it shrinks. So sometimes they'll take pictures, or sometimes they'll just mark it off. So what the Kohen could do, if it's over here, he'll just take a pencil, and he'll mark it, I measure it, and then when I walk out the door, maybe I can't measure, but I can see that it hasn't shrunk it. It's still up to the pencil marks. Question, Zach.
How do you know that the chazaka doesn't only apply to tzaras?
Zach is asking the million-dollar question. Zach says, the Torah says, there's chazaka by tzaras. So how do you know that it's anywhere outside of tzaras? Gevaldik Rashi. We're asking for Kol Torah Kula. And we're answering, Zach saying, the question, the big question, you're answering me with peanuts. Don't ask about Tzaras. Tzaras Shkayach. What are you saying? It's a good question. What are you saying?
Why wouldn't we say it's just by Tzaras? There'll
be
a lot of ideas we learn from one thing that we extrapolate to a lot of other.
So Nassal says, why are you assuming that things should be limited? Everyone says Karbanos every day, I hope. At least to say the parsha of Tamid, the Mishnah of Ola, and then the minig is if an old minig is after Karbanos to say Rishma. The brisa of Rishma, Yugil Mi Shatari Rashis Ben. So that's the minig is to say the Chazan says the last line out loud, and the minig is that everyone is supposed to say the whole brisa, albeit quietly. So one of the that's very fundamental in learning, and specifically in darshan and psukim, seeing how dinim come, dinim tarish rapeh, come tarish rapeh, that's what the mishnah and rishon are all about. One of the third one is binyanav. Binyanav because of that, binyanav mishnah too. What is a binyanav? My father's house. Binyanav. What's a binyanav? So pashtu says binyanav either is or is very similar to what the drasha argamar is using. What drasha is argamar using? It's what we call those who learn Bava Kama may remember Tzara Shava. Yeah. That phase. I compare it to various cases, but Tzara Shava is complicated. The simple, if I have multiple sources for an idea and I expand it to Kol Tarkula to other similar cases, I call that Tzara Shava. If I just have one source, which I expand to similar cases, I call that Ma Matzinu. And according to many, that's what we call Binyanav Mikasavecha. And this becomes what it means. Is that we work on the HaKadosh Baruch Hu explained to Moshe Rabbeinu that the starting default assumption when you learn Chumash is that the things you see are examples of categories. They're examples of larger categories, and not just it is what it is. So if you see a principle in one area of Halacha, we'll assume the default assumption is it applies in other areas of halacha where it's relevant as well, unless otherwise specified. So, for example, how do you know here's a din that everyone's familiar with, another din everyone's familiar with, but the makar is far less familiar? Is it? Do we care how you hold the lulav and esrog?
Yes.
How does it have to be? The whole lulav and esrog like this, sideways. My yotze.
Derech
gidula. Gemara and sukkah. Derech gidula. It has to be the way it grows. How do you know? What's the makar? They have to be derech gidula. You know the makar is. If you've learned sukkah, you might remember. If not, it'd be hard to guess. The makar is. Anyone know? No. Think so? I don't think so. I don't think so. I'll give you a hint. It's the second half of Chumash Shemos. What's the major topic in the second half of Chumash Shemos? The Bein HaMishkan. The Torah says, an innocuous looking phrase, you made the walls of the Mishkan out of Atzei Shittim.
Omdim.
What do you mean Omdim? So the Gemara says Omdim means you can't. You have to cut it and stand it. You can't turn the lumber. When you build a house, normally it doesn't matter if it's right side up, upside down, who cares? When you build the Mishkan, it has to be, you can't turn the Krashim upside down. Because you have to remember which way the tree grew, so when you shape the Krashim, they're shaped so that it'll be standing in the proper orientation. And then the Gemara says, well, if that's true by Krashim, it ought to be true a little bit as also. I, Zach's Kashtu Gakasha. What on earth? Kachim, Moed, what the Lul of Nesu have to do with the Krashim of the Mishkan? So the answer is, as you begin to learn more broadly, more deeply, realize that's one of the fundamental principles of the Torah Shabbat Peh, is that the starting assumption is that you can learn concepts from one area of halacha to another area of halacha unless otherwise specified. The default is you can expand. There are certain, sometimes we'll say it's two different, from Isser to Mammon or something like that. But the default position is, so now, Krashim and Esri Lulav nowhere else, probably because those are the only two areas of halacha where there's a requirement for plant material, a very specific type of plant material in its natural state. Matzah is made from plants, but it's ground up. But that's not gonna... Oh, interesting. So do you have to hold the Ezov right side up? I don't know, maybe. Maybe. You have to hold the Ezov right side up? Maybe. I wonder. Parazuma. Parazuma, maybe. So that's, again, that's the idea. If you learn from Krashim to Lulav and Esrog, the answer is, yeah, that's the principle of Mamotzinu. So here, too, you're absolutely right. From Nigei Batim to Cheskas Penuya, to Cheskas Eishes Ish, to Cheskas Shochot, to Cheskas Iser, Cheskas Tumah, the answer is, that's right, as you said, the default assumption is Mamotzinu. Now, we have just a few minutes. Let's begin to scratch the surface of the second child. Rove. Let's get to know Rove. We got to know Chazak a little bit, what it is, where it comes from. And now, as I said, the Shailov, where does Chazak come from? The Gemara took care of that in half an Amud because the first suggested Mukher works. The Gemara now is going to ask, Ninoa Milstavar Ban Zilba Saruba, how do you follow Rove? And that goes from the top of your Aleph Amalf to the top, you see the two dots on top of your Beis Amalf? The Gemara is going straight for an entire block, going through at least 8 or 10 different candidates. Maybe you learn from here. Maybe you learn from there. Maybe you learn from there. There's a lot going on. Richard, when we get to your Aleph Amalf, Aleph Seder, we're going to see Blinetta and the Targum. There's a lot going on. Beautiful Tosis and blah, blah, moving part. For now, we're just getting our feet wet, getting introduced to the concept of Rome. Let's see, for the first couple lines, Ray give us a lot to think about. How do you have this second principle, the pan-halachic principle that Chazal give us, Zil Basa Ruba, follow the road, Minala? Where does that come from? You want to know where it comes from? What do you mean? It's a pasuk in Chumash. Beferish a pasuk in Mishpatim. Acher Amlahatos is in what context in Chumash? What's the Torah? Torah follow the robe of judges. Right? Sanhedrin, Beis Din. So either the 13th, right? You have a Beis Din of 23, you have a Beis Din of 3, a Beis Din of 71, a Beis Din adjudicates some sort of case. Din in Mammon is Din in Nefashos. So if they all agree, it's one thing. But typically, you're going to have a panel of judges. They're not necessarily all going to agree. So in American law, the jury can only issue a verdict if it's unanimous. If it's not unanimous, you typically have a hung jury. But in halacha, that is not the case. Halacha, if you have a capital case, 23 dayanim, it might be ironically, if all dayanim say chayim, we don't give a misa. But 13 say chayim and 10 say pater. 20 say chayim and 3 say pater, chayim misa. How do you know? But look, on the one hand you have 20 dayanim said chayim, but 3 said pater. How do you kill the guy? Some dayanim said pater, So the Torah says, Acharei Rabim Lahatas. You follow the rove. You follow the rove. That's what the pasuk says. You follow the rove, even to give me. So, or we have a civil case. Dinei Mamonos. I'm suing all those cases around Rambam talking about this morning. And I'm suing you over a loan, over a deal that we did, whatever it is. Or I claim the motor vehicle accident, whatever it is. I'm suing you for money for some reason or another. I take you to Basin. We appear in front of three judges. And then in the end, two say he owes the money, one says he doesn't owe the money. And what's it then? He owes the money. I owe the money, but one died and said I'm Potter. They usually don't know who said what. But I will know that there were, it was 2-1. 2-1, so one said Potter, why do I have to pay? The answer is? Achre, Rabba. The pasuk, it's true. If I had not had the pasuk without the pasuk, maybe I would have thought I need unanimity. But the Torah says you don't. You do not need unanimous. Achre, Rabba, Mahatas. So the Gemara says, you want to know where a robe comes from? That's easy. Chazaka, it's complicated. When searching around to find a deer and a pasuk in the Torah, it's easy. Acharam lahatos. The Gemara says, not so fast. There are two types of robe. There are two types of robe. Take a question in a couple moments. Let's just see where a great critical point here. The Gemara says, there are two types of robe. When I say robe, I can one of two things. Acharam lahatos is type number one. But I want to know how you know type number two. What are the two types? The Gemara says, Ruba de Isa Kaman, a robe that Sheyesh Lifane, you know that the Taf in Aramaic often corresponds to a Shin in Hebrew. Like Shalosh becomes Telas, or Shor becomes Tura, or Sheleg becomes Talga. So Isa, Aleph Yud Taf Aleph, or Is, is Yesh. Yesh, there is. In Hebrew, it becomes this. So, Ruba de Isa Kaman, a robe she yeshno lifanein, a robe that is in Kaman, in front of us. If there's a robe that is in front of us, like Teisha Chanuyos or Sanhedrin, Teisha Chanuyos is you're in a town, you find a piece of meat, and you're not sure which butcher shop it came from. And there are kosher stores or non kosher stores. So, if 9 stores sell kosher, 1 store sells treif, Teisha Chanuyos literally means 9 stores. Chanus is the story. But now Rashi explains. That's the case. That's a Gemara elsewhere that the 9 stores sell kosher and 1 store sells treif. And I found packaged meat, but the label is missing. I can't tell which store it came from. So I have the right to assume, again, there are more details, but in principle, I have the right to assume it came from the kosher store. Why? Because I could look around town. There are 10 butcher shops, none of which are kosher. What's that? Is that a chazaka? No, it's a rove. What type of rove? I could look. Here are 9 stores. Here's 1 store. Or Sanhedrin, right? The Basin. Here are 23 Dayanim. 13 said X and 10 said Y. So that's a rove sheyeshno lifaneinu. In other words, that's a closed set. There's a finite number of discrete items. Here's all my Dayanim, and I can measure rove this and mina zet. I have all the butcher shops. They're all here, all the butcher shops in town. I can measure. These many are kosher, these many are trade. The Gemara says, that's pasha. Okay, so that's acharam lahatos. That's amazing. I have dayanim. What's the rove? Right? Or a somewhat different case. Maybe we'll get further in to talk about it. Something that's a lot like Ruba de Isa Kaman is, let's say, I have 5 bottles of soda, and 4 are kosher, 1 is trade, but then all the labels get ripped off. And I don't know which one's which. So that's also a type of Ruba de Isa Kaman. I have 5 bottles. The bottles are all here. Closed set. The Gemara says, how about Ruba de Leisa Kaman? A robe that's not in front of us. What's a robe that's not in front of us? That was the Shaila. Kika mi bayalan. You only had the Shaila. Ruba de Leisa Kaman. A robe that's not in front of us. What does that mean? Kegam katan uketana. What's the case of katan uketana? So Rashi explains the sugi in Yevamos. One thing we talked about Yibu just the other day. The Parsha of Yibim, Parsha of Kiseitze, 90 seconds of background. The Parsha of Yibim, Parsha of Kiseitze, Torah says, a husband and wife are married, husband passes away with no living descendants. Husband passes away with no living descendants, but does leave behind a wife. The wife survives the husband, and at least one brother. So if he leaves behind at least one brother and a wife, but no descendants, So then the woman either has to have Yibum, get married to one of the brothers, or one of the brothers has to do chalitza with her to release her to marry whoever else she wants to. At least in theory, the ideal is Yibam. That's discussion not for now. And the Torah says that that's the ideal, that she would marry the first husband, had no children, so she'll marry for one of the first husband's brothers. And that's, here's what's interesting. It's Yibam is a mitzvah, but you're on a knife's edge. Because if it's a mitzvah, if all the criteria are in place, that Yibam applies, then it's a mitzvah for the almana to marry her dead husband's brother. However, if one of the dinim of Yibam is not in place, if there's no mitzvah of Yibam, it's not just not a mitzvah, it's one of the biggest averos. It's gilui arayos, kares, yeharig v'yavar. Because outside of the mitzvah of Yibam, let's say a husband dies and he did have children. So now that there's no mitzvah for his wife to marry his brother, it's eshes achim. It's one of the arayos. It's yeharig v'yavar. That's what we call eshes achim shelo b'makom mitzvah. I wish we had a marker. Here we go. Eishes achim, shalom, the makom mitzvah. If the mitzvah of Yibam, for whatever reason, does not apply, for instance, the fellow died but he had living children, and now he's not a mitzvah for his wife to marry his brother, it's avera chamura ad lamor. They're going to marry and have children, and the children will be mamzerim, and there's kares, he's talking about yavar, gil arayos. But the Torah says, if there's a mitzvah of Yibam, so then that's an exception. It's A, mutter, and B, a mitzvah. So you really got to know what you're doing. So the Gemara, so now he said, and that, Rashi tells us, is what our Gemara is talking about. Katana is one of the rules for Yibam to apply. One of them is only applies if the husband finds out children. Another one is that it only applies if the Yavam and the Yavama, the two who are going to get married now, the widow and the dead husband's brother, they're both at least anatomically capable of having children. And one of them is a saris. Hold on, hold yours for a moment. He's a saris, or she's an islandess, which means not only infertile, but like fundamentally, like they don't have normal puberty, their body's developing totally differently. Like almost like missing, usually means like they're missing hormonal glands that drive normal reproduction. Like fundamentally off, so then there's no mitzvah yibum. If they do get married, it would be A, not a mitzvah, and B, an isser chamur. Now, normally, if they're adults, you can a doctor doing an examination will be able to tell whether the man is healthy or a saris, whether the woman is healthy or an islandess. But you can only tell that once they're adults. If they're before bar bas mitzvah, you can't tell yet whether their development, physical development, would be normal or abnormal. So normally, we would only have yibum once he's over bar mitzvah and she's over bas mitzvah for a wide variety of reasons. But let's say, at Rosh Hashanah, Yivam Samachal, let's say they did Yibum before Bar Bas Mitzvah. Right. Odd, okay, they wouldn't recommend it. That's what happened. So Rashi says, Yavam Kat Shabal Yivam Kitana, Yidu Zemza. We wouldn't have told them to do that, but once they did it, let them grow up together. They'll stay together, they'll grow up together. The problem is when they grow up together, but there's a chance, we can't yet tell. There's a chance that he's going to, as he grows older, we're going to discover that he's a saris. There's a chance that she grows older, we're going to discover that she's an islandess. And if that's the case, chas v'shalom, not only is that a personal tragedy for them, a personal challenge for them, but it means that there was no mitzvah yibum, and therefore they're living in sin. So how do we allow the katna katana to stay together? There's a chance that there's no chance that he's a saris, she's an islandess. Therefore there's a chance that this is mitzvah. It's a lot of steps of logic. If you held cup, basically what we're saying, and we allowed this couple to stay together, even though there's an outside chance that it's actually awesome. We won't know for a few years until they get into adolescence. So we should tell them you have to separate for a couple of years. There's something to ask a little. Maybe he's a saris, maybe she's an islandess. If that's the case, so then this is an issur for them to stay together. But the Mishnah is based on B'lamaisa. The Mishnah in Yavama says, Mutter! But the Gemara says, why is it Mutter? That's based on the principle of Ro. That's Ro. It's a possibility that the boy's going to turn out to be Saris, But what percentage of men are sarisim? A very small percentage. 1%, 0.1%, 5%, I don't know what the numbers are exactly, but clearly the overwhelming row of men are not sarisim, which means if you have a 10-year-old boy, the chances are he's going to develop a normal, healthy man. Rove is that he's not a saris. Rove is that she's not an islandess, and therefore we allow them to sit together based on the principle of rove. And the Gemara says, what type of rove? And we'll end with the following note. We're over time. Let's wrap up with this. What type of rove is that? What rove is that? Is it Issa Kaman? Issa Kaman would be, there are five men in this room, and one of them is a saris, you don't know which one. This is a statistical statement. It's about men in the world. Most men develop like X. Whenever we have a statement that most people do X, most people don't pay their debts ahead of time. Most 10-year-old boys will develop into healthy non-sarisim. And so on and so forth. 1,001 robes like that throughout Shas, those are statistical statements that we call Ruba de Lesa Kaman. It's not in front of us, I mean, it's not a closed set that I can count. It's an open set statistical statement. So Gemara says, that's very important. That's far more common in halacha than Ruba de Issa Kaman. Probably, we've had them already. Probably, most shitas work out well. That's Ruba de Lesa Kaman. So Gemara says, where does that come from? That's not Rav Matos. Rich, next time, we will see that the Gemara's first Gemara, we're not still the Makaros. We want to see, though, begin to think about it, which one is stronger? Ruba de Lesa Kaman? Chazaka. And that will ultimately give us a lot of lomdish insight into Rove and, even more importantly for now, into Chazaka.